Welcome to part two of our conversation with Wes Forsythe.
We were talking earlier about the ideology that, something's the devil or this is demonic, obviously overused in every which way possible. Do you see any difference when we're talking about, methods in communication with people? There's obviously the big stigma around the Ouija board. It's like one of the oldest ways, I guess, of trying to communicate. And obviously today there's far more things that people use in similar fashions, I would say, of trying to communicate, whether it be obelisk or getting an EVP or a ghost box, insert latest thing here. Is there a difference or in using those more modern things versus the stigma that's attached with something like a Ouija board?
I do think most of the more modern things, if you will, the ghost box, for example, I do think they are a safer method of communication. But I do firmly believe that in any communication scenario, that a lot of it is left up to the individual and what you've done to fortify your soul, if you will, to protect yourself. I've watched investigators on TV, but in real world too. When I hear someone go, "Use my energy to manifest,"
yeah,
I'm like, "Don't fucking say that."
Yeah,
but to me, that's an invitation. Nothing I ever do when I'm communicating can be construed in any way as an invitation, in any way to mess with me. And I don't go in and I don't provoke. Mm-hmm. I don't challenge. I just go puff my chest out and I go in like Patrick Swayze in that movie where he was a bouncer. That's kind of the way I look at the whole situation. To me, a ghost box, because there's no physical interaction, is a relatively safe way unless you get too involved in it mentally. I have two ways that I communicate. I've developed, I would say, some empathic abilities. In other words, occasionally there's a voice in my ear, but usually I just get emotions. I feel emotions. But when I feel the emotions, I take a little bit of them. And then if I feel they're too strong, if I feel that somebody's, abusing the privilege, and if you want to put that in real world terms, the guy that comes up talking to you and gets in your face, if you will, mm-hmm. I take a step back and say, that's not mine. You keep that to yourself.
Sure.
Thanks for the effort. So I always keep that little wall between me and the other side of the veil. When you're talking about Ouija boards, to me, that is a dangerous method. I'm not saying it's universally dangerous. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that you are actually, to use a Ouija board, you are actually asking for direct physical manipulation. It goes beyond what I would call simple ideomotor effect. It goes into, you have to move, be willing to let your hands move the planchet to the letter W. That I'm not going to use the word possession in that case, but I do think you are opening up your body and asking the spirit to use your hands, to use your arms to do that. Now, my other communication method is dowsing rods. Now, I feel they're much safer because it's pure ideomotor effect. It's your body responding to an energy. Mm-hmm. You're not asking them to move. No, if you do it properly, I should say, you're not actually asking them to take your hands and move them, yes or no, whatever, with the rods. You're just letting your body respond to the energy around you.
I see. So there's more of actually using one's body in using a Ouija board than some of the other methods.
That's how I feel about it. That is how I feel about it.
Yeah. I get my question to that would be something like, let's say, and one doesn't have to be holding these things, but a lot of times they are. If you're using an obelisk or something that will create words, or even a tape recorder that is being used to capture EVPs and such, mm-hmm. is the spirit only using the object that's being held, or is the energy of that person who's holding the object also being used as an antenna, if you will, to get that information? Or would there be any different if it was sitting on a table across the room versus being held in someone's hand?
I will say that I think in the examples you gave, provided you're mentally prepared, in other words, you're not focusing on using your energy to attract anything to the ovalis. If you think of it as a mechanical device, EVP recorder will work just as well sitting across the room as it will in your hand. That's been my experience.
And, okay.
Some of the best audio evidence that I captured when I was investigating was on tape recorders that we left in a building, and we were not anywhere near that part of the building sure. at the time we captured the evidence. So that's my personal interpretation there. But once again, intent has a whole lot to do with it.
Sure.
And when I see a person sitting in a dark room with a ghost box, a shack hack or whatever, and they're picking, you know, these little segments of speech out of the static and the country music and everything else.
Yeah.
I think if you want it, I guess I could say that if you want it too bad, you would be prone to open yourself up to that type of interference. Now, that being said, and most psychics, mediums, if you will tell you that I believe in the whole aura thing. Now, I do not see auras. I've never had any luck seeing auras. But when you go into one and you actually have a Reiki done or aura work done, they will tell you, well, you know, you've got a hole in your aura here. Now, I'm not saying all of them are right, but I'm saying it is a common enough theme that now if you go into investigate, I tell people, don't even go on a ghost hunt if you have a head cold. Don't take any weakness into a ghost hunt. And because I do think ghost and the more dickish of them, if you will, are opportunistic. So that would be a good way to answer your question. I do think that these entities that we communicate with are opportunistic and would take advantage of any opportunity, any portal, any hole that you leave for them where they can do their little let's be a dick to the living thing and take it from there.
Interesting. Let's talk about tarot cards a little bit before we wrap up. I know that you read them. How did you get into that area? How did you discover your ability to do that?
That was a pure accident, I swear to God.
Okay.
I started collecting tarot cards just because I thought the artwork was absolutely awesome. Mm-hmm. And so my collection was unique tarot cards. They weren't the traditional type decks. They were more artistic decks. And I had some in my briefcase one day. Well, okay, let me back up. One day on a lark, I have a friend, Ken Boggle, who is a gifted, extremely gifted tarot card reader. And he used to do these weekly pull a card, tell you what it means, and give you pop psychology bullshit advice. Sure. You know, to the masses.
Yeah.
I do believe that they work in a very personal setting, but when you pull a card and you try to tell everybody, you know, you can read what the definition is, but beyond that, I don't think it's like the horoscope in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. Now, he couldn't do it one day. He was on the road traveling to an event where he was going to be reading tarot cards. And I said, don't worry, Ken, I got this. And so I went on and I had a deck called the Cat Tarot, the Baroque Cat Tarot. And I pulled a card and I looked at the card and I just made up shit. And I based it on the artist, what the artist included in the picture. Now, okay. I'll tell you how deep this was. I literally... Now, this was on Facebook, so it's not like it was a paid gig. Mm-hmm. I told people that because the cat in the picture was holding a boat oar, that it would be a good time to try things that are impossible because cats do not have thumbs and therefore could not hold a boat oar. Now, that was the depth of it. That was as far as it went. Psychic readers thought it was hilarious. Card readers thought it was hilarious. Their clientele thought I was making fun of tarot card readers, so I had to straighten that out. But it was just me being myself. Now, jump ahead. I'd done that a year, and I did it on and off. It was cute. It was fun. But I was at a convention just basically trying to sell T-shirts and some stuff for my from one of my podcasts, and I had some tarot cards in my briefcase. Now, in this building, there were probably 50 vendors, and if there were 10 customers milling around at a time, I would be surprised. It was bad. And I said, I'm not going to make my gas money. There's no way. What can I do to squeeze just a little more money out of these people? So I took a piece of cardboard and I wrote down, really bad tarot card readings, $5. And the first person that sat down, I had like three decks with me. And the only reason I even had them with me, my cat had been chewing on a box, one of my boxes. And so I put them in my briefcase so the cat couldn't get to them. So I pulled, I said, pick a deck. I'll let you pick the deck. And they picked, and they, it was the Tarot of Fire. Now, the Tarot of Fire is a beautifully illustrated deck, but if the artist couldn't think of a really creative way to put fire into the image, he would just have people do the image more traditionally with people with their hair on fire.
Okay.
So the card I drew had like 8 or 10 people sitting in the corner in a circle, and their hair was on fire. And so I pulled the card, and I was trying to think of something funny to say. And I looked at it, and I drew a blank. I just, nothing about that card struck me as funny. So the best I could do is try to just be myself. And I leaned across the table, looked the woman in the eye, and I said, someone wants to set your hair on fire. And I'm expecting her to giggle.
Sure.
You know, brush it off, whatever. What do you mean? No, she leans into the table and goes, yes, go on. And I went, I'm sorry, what? I was surprised. And what it was, and so she explained it to me. She had been diagnosed with lupus, and her doctor was suggesting experimental chemotherapy.
Okay.
As in, your hair on fire. So the hair stood up on the back of my neck, the whole classic intervention there. And I said, okay, I'm still going to have fun with it, but I need to take this seriously. How did I pull that out of thin air?
Yeah.
So I decided to, in other words, I decided to stay true to my roots. I do not read the instructions. I have had no formal tarot card reading experience.
Yeah.
But I read tarot cards and I do it that way. I'll carry around 5 or 6 decks when I do it. I let the customer, whichever deck they're drawn to, they pull it. And then I don't even draw cards most of the time. I just shuffle until my bad hand-eye coordination or my spirit guides knock them out of my hand, but I'll drop 2 or 3 cards, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I read. And I have had really good results with it. Now, that being said, a lot of it, I think most of the time people know the answers. In other words, I think tarot cards, even in the best scenario, are just a way to guide our intuition. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that the other side wants me to be able to help people whenever that's available through the tarot deck. I believe they make me draw the correct cards that I can get a message that will help the person.
And it just kind of comes through you. You just kind of say whatever comes to mind, but what's coming to mind, maybe there's a reason.
As a matter of fact, I've learned I've got to say the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Because one time, one of my psychic friends, back in during the height of the COVID epidemic, there was a missing person. A family, their son had disappeared, and they wanted to know if he was okay. You know, so Shay contacted her, and she said, I'm reaching out to some of my friends who have different gifts and tell me what you get about this point. She gave me his name, I believe, is about really all I got. And so I pulled my favorite cat tarot deck, and the card I pulled had a cat with a bowl of fruit. First thing that popped into my mind was he's feeding people. And I went, well, that's fucking stupid. What, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, I looked at the card a little farther. I said, you know, everything tells me he's okay. And I did look at it. I flipped out some other cards and got a little bit more of a message. But at the end of the day, my message was he's fine. He's not in a great situation, but you know, he is safe. He's sound. Well, they found him a couple weeks later. He was at a protest up in, I guess it was Oregon, mm-hmm. one of the big ones. And guess what he was doing?
What?
Taking food to the protesters.
How interesting.
Yeah. So at that moment, I said, okay. You know, you can do this, Wesley, but you have to pay attention. And so if somebody sits down with me, the first thing pops into my mind, I'll tell them, I say, okay, now this sounds totally stupid, whatever, but this is what I'm getting.
Do you even need the card sometimes, I wonder? If somebody just said to you, what's going on with this or that?
Honestly,
just the
no.
first, yeah, the first thing that comes to your mind just kind of comes out. And it may sound asinine, but sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, this really connects with that person.
I would say, no, I probably don't. But that's because a lot of the times when people sit down, especially if they have a specific question, I would say that most of the time they know the answer already anyway.
Sure.
And I do go out of my way not to get too much information.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like a cold reading. But a lot of times they've sat down with me and the answer is just so obvious. You know, one woman wanted a quick reading. She said, should I leave my husband? And honestly, the first thing that I thought of was, if you have to ask that question, you probably already know.
Yeah.
But I actually drew a card, and this is a very classic card. It's the Flaming Tower with people or whatever jumping out of it. And it hit me the way to explain the card. So in other words, the card had already matched what my gut feeling was.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, he is going to do something very soon that's going to be so fucking stupid that is just going to, piss you off so incredibly bad that it won't even be a question. You'll feel embarrassed you even had sat here and asked me this.
Yeah.
Now, how did that work out? I don't know. They may still be happily married today. She never came back and said, oh, you gave me shitty advice.
Sure.
But, that does come up from time to time. But I do feel the cards... for whatever reason, however it works, they do guide my intuition to give people answers that are helpful. Now, I do tell people, don't sit down across me and ask me, like, is my husband cheating? I'm not that guy. I'm the guy that would help him with an alibi if he was my friend.
Mm-hmm.
So just so you know, I'm not here to answer the light. Although I get a lot of serious questions. I get a lot of career advice, and that makes me nervous as hell.
Sure.
You know, guy sits down, should I quit my job? And I'm like, oh God, please don't tell me you should quit it.
Because what you're saying is going to, if they're going to follow it, could affect someone's life greatly. And you got to take that. Yeah.
So I'm kind of learning the intricacies of it, if you will. I found like certain decks are better at certain things. I have one deck that's really good at describing their current situation. So in other words, the first part of the reading is just me asking them, okay, now is this right? And they go, yeah, that applies. And so in other words, it's more of a roundabout way to get to the answer, but still not trying to get too much direct information from them. As long as I can show them that's what the cards are telling me that I need to know to lead them to the most fortuitous outcome, as I tell them.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Wes Forsythe. A big thank you to him for being on the program and sharing his experiences with us. And thank you to you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without that. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.